complaints about chokeholds were filed with our Civilian Complaint Review Board. Where was the CCRB? Where was the former police commissioner? Where was the former mayor? There should have been an outrage over the fact that something that was banned under all circumstances, complaints of 1,022, someone missed doing their job. And I think we have to press for absolute adherence to prohibitions on chokeholds.
Should police wear cameras?
It's really tricky. I know the progressive community is saying that, but the cops are not going to be able to turn it on and off, because they'll turn it on and off when there's a favorable interaction. So are they going to be able to have surveillance 24/7? Is it going to be a database of all of us congregating and assembling? You could have a very Orwellian 1984 scenario in New York City and America. What I say to people, think through that advocacy of having cops have cameras on their uniforms.
We're going to continue this conversation after the show, and I want to encourage people to let people know about this conversation and to weigh in yourselves by writing to us at democracynow.org. I want to thank Edith Baez, mother of Anthony Baez, Kadiadu Diallo, mother of Amadou Diallo, Deborah Goodman, arrested for filming the NYPD, and Norman Siegel. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Mate. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today we'll talk a little bit more about Gaza.
KBOO invites you to the first Cascade Media Mixer, Tuesday, August 5th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Weird Shift Storefront, 201 North Alberta. This networking event of local media makers and artists from the Pacific Northwest is for making connections, sharing ideas, and collaborating on media projects. This month focuses on building momentum towards the Cascade Media Convergence happening this fall. The Cascade Media Convergence will take place September 19 to the 21st and is a regional gathering of community-based media organizations, journalists, and artists to explore democratic models of media production and distribution. For more info on the CMC, visit www.cascademedia.cc. Again, that's the Cascade Media Mixer, Tuesday, August 5th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Weird Shift Storefront, 201 North Alberta.
Do you worry that corporate power is totally out of control? Tune into the KBOO Evening News every Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. beginning August 5th. To hear the new weekly commentary by yours truly, Paul Cienfuegos. I'll be sharing stories about communities that are rising up against corporate control and passing laws that exercise their right to govern themselves. That's every Tuesday on the KBOO Evening News, beginning August 5th. Don't miss it.
Yeah, it's a James Brown biofilm out now.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited to see that.
I am.
That has nothing to do with today's conversation.
Absolutely not.
But I know that was Edwin Starr. Yes, I know. Thank you, Engineer Steve. I'm just saying.
Engineer Steve knows more stuff than we do. Why don't we put Engineer Steve here and I can go home and go to sleep?
That sounds like a good idea.
Near deep sleep. All right. This is KBOO 90.7, your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. And we're talking about,
Everyone's favorite topic.
Yeah. Everyone's favorite war. Is it even a war? I don't know. It's just.
I don't know what else you would call it.
It's just
if
awful.
It looks like a war, it smells like a war, and if it kills children in the streets,
well,
then it's a war.
What is it good for?
Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing. Well, I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting question. 231-8187. We're going to talk about Gaza. And I really am hoping people will call with informed and reasonable discourse.
Indeed. I'm going to lay an informed and reasonable something on the table.
Really? What is that? That's scary. What is that going to look like? A 45 automatic? What
Israel, are you talking? Israel is, I think, for all intents and purposes, a theocracy.
And no.
No?
No.
Okay, well.
But go ahead.
All right. It is, it's recognized in its own laws and its own national charter as a Jewish state.
That's true.
It has a democratic representation as a parliamentary system of government, but I think it is culturally and organizationally and for all practical purposes a theocracy. Those citizens of Israel who are not Jewish are of second class status. I think a theocracy by its very nature is abhorrent to the notion of democracy. We ought to have nothing to do with supporting theocracies. We ought to withdraw every penny of the $3-something billion of military aid we give to Israel every year. And we should just we should disengage ourselves. It is a losing struggle. Nobody is ever going to win there. There will never be any real resolution to this. And the longer we are involved, the more costly it becomes to us in dollars and in integrity.
Well, I don't disagree with any of your analysis, except that the reality of the situation and the real historical origins both of Israel and of the situation that exists today are a little more complicated than that. And a lot of it has to do with American imperialism. And I would argue that the post-war structure of the world, essentially with the Cold War, essentially created and maintained this state as a little space within the horrors of what was potentially nuclear war.
Yes, indeed. But I didn't comment on the origins of Israel, simply that we ought to disengage ourselves and stop giving them weapons and money.
Oh, okay, I agree we should stop giving them weapons and money. But
Israel has been, in effect, a colonial state since the 1967 war. Vast swaths of its territory are not even recognized as part of Israel and are still called the occupied territories. That should tell you something. Israel has illegally been building colonies in the occupied territories. This is the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. For decades, there has been this sometimes simmering, sometimes boiling civil war with its Palestinian co-residents that there is no resolution in sight anywhere. It is a cesspool, and we should get the hell out. We should stop supporting them.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you, actually.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's true, but I think we need to make a more real politic analysis of what's going on.
All right, why don't
Could, should, would is all nice and good.
Why don't you lead us through
that? Well, let's just understand what happened. First of all, historically, the Jewish people, because they refused to become Christians, or in many cases Islamic, suffered enormous degrees of discrimination and punishment all through a large period of time from the first diaspora, well, the second diaspora, clear up to modern times.
Well, you could argue going back even further before there was such a thing as Christianity or Islam.
Really, you could. Yeah. But
there was that whole business with the Egyptians, remember?
Oh, those Egyptians.
And then there was the Babylonian captivity.
Oh, the Babylonian captivity. Yeah. That was the first diaspora, the Babylonian.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, we have this situation where one people, the first that we know of, essentially one God religion, persists and evolves in the context of being persecuted. In modern times, that is jumping ahead to the, let's just jump ahead to the 19th century, it is reasoned for, you know, for good purposes that the Jewish people will never be free from unfair and vicious discrimination, including murder. One of the traditions of the Russian Empire was to, around Easter time, blame the Jews for all of the problems that the Tsar's government had created and persisted with. And that led to something called pogroms, which were essentially attacks led by upper-class young men in Russia and followed by all kinds of ignorant folk who would go into the shtetls, the small Jewish communities, and murder and rape and rob and destroy. And this would happen every Easter time with great regularity, including vast plots which were believed by a large number of Russians that the Jews, for example, at Passover drank the blood of Christian babies. I mean, all kinds of silly stuff. And, you know, we laugh. But
it's all true, all of it.
Yeah, right. We laugh, but it really was serious. And this led very quickly in the late 1800s to a reasonable, Theodor Herzl and others, reasonable decision that the Jewish people would never be free from this discrimination unless they had a true homeland, a true national identity and a nation.
A theocracy.
Yeah, I'm not going to fight with you about theocracy.
Okay, good.
Anyway, so that decision really led to a lot of effort by wealthier people who were Jewish to purchase land and to become involved in what was then clearly Palestine. Meanwhile, Palestine and all of that region were at that time under the Ottoman Empire. Following World War I, however, which people are beginning to pay a lot of attention to as a factor in things today. Following World War I, the Ottoman Empire was divided into essentially holdings by the imperial powers. England, in the course of World War I, I call them perfidious Albion because I like that sound of that. But what England really did was persuade the Arab peoples to become more nationalist and to support the British against the Ottomans, against the Turks, and at the same time make promises to the European Jewish wealthy and others that if they did not support the Germans in the Central Powers in the war, there would be, as a result, a reward of a Jewish state. In other words, Palestine was sold by people who didn't own it twice.
Ah.
So this sets things up, really, for what is to follow. Then comes the Holocaust, and after that, after the murder of 6 million Jews, there was no way in the world that the new United Nations and the new order that came out of that, which includes the Cold War, really, could not guarantee a Jewish state. The propaganda in the United States, and I remember it very well, I've talked about it before, but I remember it very well, essentially created the idea that Palestine was underused or empty, that essentially there weren't any Palestinian people. And therefore, occupying that country and turning it into a modern state with modern farming techniques, then at that point there was a real socialist quality to that Jewish movement. And that it would be
kibbutzes and all
kibbutz
that.
And so kibbutz. On. Yes.
Sorry, I'm mispronouncing my Hebrew.
Well, yeah, I would expect a Catholic not to be able to. Anyway, blah blah blah. Anyway, the propaganda beginning in 1946-1947 was very intense, and moneyed people who really thought there should be a Jewish homeland were very invested in it, and eventually both. All the countries in the UN essentially agreed to it. Meanwhile, the Arab peoples in the region were not as statesmanlike, nor as clever, nor as aggressive as they might have been. And there followed a series of wars. I don't want to list them all. You can, Abe, if you want to. But there were a series of wars in which the surrounding nations, and necessarily not really Saudi Arabia, certainly not Turkey, certainly not Iran at that point, made war on Israel and failed dramatically. And as a consequence of that, we have the situation in which Israel becomes more and more empowered, and as its population grows with Jews from various places in the world, there is a system established, which essentially I will call an apartheid system. And in that system, colonies are established in areas that were supposed to be part of the original partitioned areas that were to be set aside for the Palestinian people. And that has become normative. That's become established accepted by much of the world, particularly by the United States. The United States, for its part, was looking for a firm ally in whom it could have absolute trust and with whom it could essentially control the vast and complex politics of the Arab world. So this is a setup for trouble. And Israel becomes successfully a modern industrial state, while the Palestinian people are placed in a second-class or even third-class situation and are periodically harmed in varieties of ways by the Israelis, who have established, through both propaganda and action, a very powerful modern state in a very tiny land.
It sounds a lot like the pogroms in the Russian Empire.
I'm not going there.
I just did.
I know you did.
I think it's lousy.
What? Lousy?
It's lousy. Yes. One thing that I have a lot of trouble with as a citizen of the United States of America is our government's unequivocal embrace of Israel and its unwavering support of them economically and most especially militarily.
This is called real politics. This has nothing to do with morality. Nothing.
Well, how do you divorce the two? It's very easy to sit here and say it's real politics and has nothing to do with morality. Have you seen the photographs of this latest offensive in Gaza? The children, burned bodies of children in the streets. How do you write that off as saying it has nothing to do with morality?
Well, I'm not writing anything off, first of all.
You just did. You said this is realpolitik. It has nothing to do with morality.
I'm saying it has nothing to do with morality. Obviously, it has nothing to do with morality. You just established that. When you murder people, when you use superior weaponry, when you use the tactics of mass warfare against a population of people, ordinary people, that has nothing to do with morality.
That is nonsense on its face, Joe.
What do you mean?
You're saying if you use the tactics of modern warfare and of mass killing, suddenly that falls outside of regular moral equations?
No, I think war falls outside the notions of moral equations.
So war is neither moral nor immoral, but it's this amoral construct?
War, well, yeah. Yeah, actually, it doesn't have a moral aspect. We always talk about, and the UN always talks about, the idea of just war and unjust war. Nonsense. War, what is it good for?
I submit,
yes,
that the killing of innocents by whatever techniques employed,
yeah,
is an immoral act.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that would have to include all the activities of Hamas, right?
It would.
And it would have to include all the activities of the various wars that went before that. Yeah.
Yes.
And it would have to include, by the way, the inability or the disinterest of the Arab states in absorbing these populations that were ousted. Now, one of the things I want to emphasize, and it's really important, because there was propaganda suggesting that Palestine was like an empty desert, which was made to bloom by these new settlers,
mm-hmm.
because that propaganda was so widely disseminated in the United States, and because the Jews were built into a European-esque model of society, mm-hmm. and the Arabs were made to be a Middle Ages society, all this propaganda, the United States really treated all of the Arab peoples as an other, and all of the people of Israel, except for anti-Semites, as us, as our kind of people.
Ah.
So you have a model that is set up for disaster, and with the value of the perceived value of Israel as an ally, a firm and absolute ally who will build weapons, who will take American money and turn it into powerful weaponry, you have a perception that this is our only reliable friend in the region. So that when I say that I want to divorce it from morality, I assume that Israel's behavior is immoral. I assume that the insanity of Hamas is also immoral.
Well, I'm glad you make those two assumptions.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no argument in my mind that what's happening right now is horrible and wrong. That's not the point, though. The point is that the United States is directly responsible for what's going on. Not indirectly responsible, directly responsible.
Yes, directly responsible for the horrible immorality and violence that's going on.
Yeah.
So now I want to make one thing very clear here. While I'm expressing my contempt for Israel and its actions,
yeah.
I feel equally contemptuous for Hamas and its actions. It's an intractable situation.
Yeah.
The only thing I can say in Hamas's favor is that they, by and large, represent a portion of the Israeli population that lives as second-class citizens, as we've just finished explaining.
Well, I don't think Hamas has great support among the... Not that there is support for Israel among the Israeli Arabs, mm-hmm. but I think Hamas is... If you watch the behavior of all the Arab states in the region and many others in Israel itself, there has not been any intifada. There has been no real uprising by the people in what remains of Palestine on the West Bank and so on.
Yeah, this is very true. And there's also the fact that the Hamas ticket was elected in the last Palestinian election.
Right.
We should go to the phones.
Well, I think we should go to the phones, but I do want to make one more point and really make it clear. The current government of Israel, if we look at the history of governance in Israel through time, the current government of Israel is much more fascist-like, much less willing to tolerate any dissent, and much more involved in a warlike approach to the question of the separation of the two-state solution, so-called, than has ever been there before. Each ideation of Israeli politics following each of the many wars, which were all unsuccessful by the Arab states and the Palestinian people, each of those has produced nothing but a stronger right-wing Israel.
Yeah, really viewed through this prism, the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin in 1995 really looms large.
Right.
He was seemingly the last Israeli leader who leaned in a progressive sort
of
direction.
There's another thing that people may not remember or understand. During the period of time between the creation of the State of Israel and today, Mossad, which is like the CIA only with steroids, has engaged in assassinations of more Western-oriented and more reasonable leadership of the Palestinian people throughout North Africa. This was a regular pattern. And that pattern has left the Palestinians bereft of many of their potential great leadership. And people don't, it's not being paid attention to, but this is really important. And that, in and of itself, is probably the most significant underreported aspect of Israeli behavior in this period of time.
So we can, I think, with a fair degree of accuracy, characterize the Israeli government's behavior towards Palestinian Arabs as both racist and religiously bigoted, not to mention indiscriminately violent.
Well, I don't know about. I mean, you throw religion into this thing. I mean,
religion, well, how do you not? How do you not?
It has nothing to do with religion.
What?
It has nothing to do with religion. Religion is a cover. It's simply a cover, just like in any war where there's a religious element. It's a cover for real politics. What the Israelis did and was become a Western power under the suzerainty, that is the support and control for a long time, not anymore, of the United States in the Cold War. It was simply a very useful extension of American foreign policy. And it was used for that purpose up until the point where Israel became too independent. But now the United States is both addicted to Israel and dependent upon Israel as a control mechanism for that region.
I think you're giving short shrift to the role of religion here.
Well, I know you think religion is very important.
I'm not a religious person, but I think it's very important in the minds of people on both sides of this conflict.
Okay.
Whatever. All right, let's go to the phones. BT, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Boy, I hardly know where to start, but one of the last points that Joe made, maybe I'll start off with that one, about the killing of some of the better Palestinians. But
better isn't the word I would use.
Well, okay,
but, you know.
Reasonable. You said reasonable.
Yeah, I did.
Well, you know, actually, what the real story on that is that the reasonable ones would be the ones who had no problem with Jews in their midst, whether they immigrated from Europe or so, or were part of the, you know, descendants of the Sabras, the ones who had been there long before Mohammed was born. And I guess so, just to play it safe, you know, maybe starting in the 20s, they've been, these moderate Muslims in the area have been murdered in large numbers by those who really did not want to have good relations, any kind of an accommodation. And it was the leader in the beginning on that would be that the Grand Mufti, was his El Hassani.
Yeah,
I've heard of that guy. A very vicious guy. Of course, he worked with the Nazis during the war, and he was begging them to let him finish the job down there. But so that's what, and they do that even as recently. You mentioned that Hamas won that last election. Well, of course, they killed a bunch of the more reasonable Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And they, well, like I said, they've been doing that for almost a century now. So you're left with the worst of the worst.
Well, I don't like terms like worst or best.
Okay.
But I understand what you mean, and I don't disagree with you.
Now, to get on to let me run through so many things here in my 3 minutes. Now, let's see. Now, you mentioned that the empty, you guys are disputing that empty desert thing. Well, I don't know if it's empty. You know, it wasn't a real very populated area, most people in the cities. But if you need to read something like, even someone who wasn't really making a case for anything, like Mark Twain in one of his early books, The Innocents Abroad, about a group of Americans who made a trip along the Mediterranean, and they traveled from Damascus down to Jerusalem. A lot of people were making a little pilgrimage for
the Holy Land.
And he writes in, if you read the book, they hardly saw anybody. Now, a lot of the people who were called Palestinians, they moved into the area back in the teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, when the Jewish settlements, the economy was growing, and they moved down there for jobs and everything. And now they say that they're, you know, it's a new ethnic group, Palestinians, but they were calling themselves Southern Syrians for so long. And of course, that's why, after Israel was first formed or something, you had the West Bank. No one was saying, hey, we're occupied by Jordan or whatever. All of a sudden, when the Jews have a little bit of something extra, like when they took the West Bank as a defensive measure, whether they should have kept it all this time is another story, all of a sudden it's, oh, my God, we're occupied.
Hey, we're bumping up against our time limit here, BT, so we need to
I'll just let you know, you guys are really terrible on this issue, and you guys ought to wise up.
Okay, right, Ben. Thanks for the call. I wanted to make another point, which is really important. One of the things that the new first of all, when you take a large people and you essentially decimate their population and produce the horror of something like the Holocaust, mm-hmm. you change people psychologically.
Of course.
You make the notion of never again a valid point.
Sure.
And with that comes a change in Zionism, where it becomes far more aggressive, and the notion of a Jewish state becomes an internationally acceptable idea. Then following all of that, and this is really unreported, if not, I mean, it's certainly underreported, and I think it's unreported. We now understand that what the armies, the irregular armies of Israel did in those early days, in the 40, 46, 47, 48, and so on, was to essentially destroy long-occupied Palestinian villages and murder people and force them out and essentially take over properties that were documentedly, legitimately owned by Arab peoples. And that happened enormously throughout the land which is now called Israel. That was just something that was done. And the West paid no attention to that. The United States never reported it. If you look at the New York Times, you won't find that as much of a discussion all through the years of the creation of the State of Israel. It's important to understand the aggression that was undertaken by these young Jewish warriors, many of whom were in what was called the Palestinian, I think it was Palestinian Legion of the British Army in World War II. One of the things that happened in Europe was that the British government, when it entered some of the concentration camps, were worried about the population engaging in an uprising after being defeated by the Allies. And they did not want to allow the Jews to practice their religion. And this Palestinian League, which was largely made up of Jewish fighters, said, hey, we're going to do our religion. And they did. And that was another major intellectual and emotional split between the Western powers and the new and blooming Israeli occupation, will become the occupation forces.
Well, I'm glad it all has nothing to do with religion. Let's go back to the phones.
We really do have to talk about the role of religion in social systems.
Indeed we do. Thomas, good morning.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, I just wanted to say, right off the bat with Joe, I agree. The religious aspect is a sideshow, and we got to be careful because it feeds right into the narrative that this is just a cultural war that goes on into the distant past, and of course that's completely false. But as far as making comments about the nature of this, you guys are talking about a war. This isn't a war. Let's just say what it is. This is an assault. You know, this is a radically asymmetrical attack, and the casualty figures, a massive disparity in the casualty figures.
Yes. I don't think either of us think this is either justified or anything but a cruel attack on largely a civilian population.
We're talking about transgressions of basic human rights and international humanitarian law, which would shame, you know, a nation of savages, essentially. You know, you have, and as far as a previous caller talking about, well, largely an empty land, I think it's documented extensively in the writing of Israeli and Jewish authors, such as Alon Pape, historian Alon Pape, and also Norman Finkelstein. You know, I mean, essentially Israel, the opening act was the textbook definition of ethnic cleansing of somewhere between 500 and 700 Palestinian villages, and the immediate conversion of 750,000 some odd Palestinians as a diaspora displaced from their homes. So, we're talking about a long-standing, a monolithic injustice that's been represented and understood as such by the international law community. You know, and really, you know, if you have to ask, well, why does this? How does this play out? You know, you talk about the geopolitics. There's a very, very important and interesting paper back in 2006, an academic paper entitled "The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy" by John Mearsheimer and Stephen Walt, two political scientists, and made a pretty clear case about how incredibly strong of a political machine the Zionist lobby is in the United States, and it affects both political parties. I mean, you've got, you know, the situation where the GOP has, you know, one of its chief backers and gatekeepers is Sheldon Adelstein, who is an arch-Zionist and casino mogul, and you have Paul Singer, who's a big hedge fund CEO, and they completely push, and essentially act as a filter for the rhetoric of the GOP. And then on the Democratic side, you know, you have people like Naeem Sabam, who's a media mogul, who says, quote unquote, you know, I'm a one issue guy, and my issue is Israel, and he's pumped, you know, just millions and millions of dollars into the Clintons and Obama and so forth. So you have this incredibly, it's not just the media.
I'm sorry, we're out of time.
Well, I do want to say, out of time or not,
sorry,
I do
we're
want
keeping to the 3-minute limit today.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
but I do want to say that everything you've said corresponds to what I understand. So I really appreciate your comment.
Well, yeah, right. Bye.
Well, you kind of cut him off mid-sentence, man.
I did. All right. That was a heavy-handed use of the timer.
I saw you use it.
I am chastised.
No, okay. You're not. You have no chastism in you. Is chastism a word?
No.
Well, you know, part of the
this is chastism by fire.
The reason why I'm trying to separate out religious notions from this is my own awareness of how the Christian fundamentalist right has turned Israel into a place where you must have a Jewish state before you can have the return of Jesus.
Yes, there is that. Absolutely. I'm
and
glad
that
you brought that
really
up.
And that is really creepy, and that is really dangerous, and that is really what allows 30 to 40% of Americans who vote Republican, et cetera, to do what they do, regardless of what is actually happening on the ground.
Yes, and in the previous administration of Bush the Dumber, we had people at the very highest levels of the executive branch of the United States government who openly embraced that notion, who believed that,
or said they believed.
Said they believed, yes, that the presence of that the Jews must control Palestine once again before Jesus can come a second time.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, Sandra Steingraber speaks about contamination without consent. She recently went to jail in upstate New York in protest of fracking. She says her small nonviolent action is to challenge fracking, which she calls a form of toxic trespass.
Yes.
At 10, it's Air Cascadia headlines and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on stage in studio, D. Mary Roberts talks with Mo Ali Leche a master of Algerian Berber music, a culture which dates back more than 5,000 years. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Ava Lake speaks with James Lavadour, an artist from Walla Walla, who has a show opening in Portland this month. All this and more coming up today on KBOO.
Yeah, and I want to add something. When we get into a discourse like this, which has a lot of anger and righteous anger, I mean, I'm truly righteous
anger. Oh, yeah.
It's difficult to try to parse out the various elements in it. I am not a defender of the state of Israel. I think the state of Israel itself, the creation of the state of Israel, was an act of intellectual and geographic denial. I do think also that the behavior, the response of Hamas and Hezbollah, etc., is as crazy as the and as evil, but they don't have much power, as is the behavior of the Israeli Defense Forces. I think the whole thing is a horrible, horrible mess, and I think Israel is disproportionately punishing and continues to be so. And I think what it's committing now is really untenable in the sense of moral activity. On the other hand, and I think this is really important, the way in which Israel went about isolating Gaza created a situation in which the people of that region had no way to support themselves. They weren't allowed to fish. Mm-hmm. They weren't allowed to. Their trade was totally controlled. And when it was possible to have openings into Egypt, and that ended in the most recent time, with the creation of a new government, which is anti-Islamic in terms of the idea of an Islamic world. It's a military government. When that ended, Hamas was essentially trapped. Hamas's response to this has always been to build these tunnels. Israel's response has always been to stop the cement coming in, and so on, and to launch these kind of lame rockets, which can kill people, but they can't be aimed.
Right.
So you have a suicidal attitude, and here's where your religion does come in,
mm-hmm.
and the notion that if you do this, you die,
uh-huh.
you get to go to paradise.
Right.
Well, when you have that kind of a model, and you have on top of that the horrible conditions under which the Palestinian people have to live and exist, and when you have their land constantly being taken, all of that leads to a great deal of aggravation, anger, and a desire for revenge. That desire for revenge doesn't necessarily take a rational form.
Well, agreed, but neither is it rational, as the Israelis say, to that God promised them that land.
Yeah, that's why I don't like God getting into this. I think it's all nonsense.
But God is into it. You're saying it has nothing to do with religion. But if you believe, if you're a resident and a citizen of Israel, and you're Jewish, and you believe that you live there by the grace and the will of God, that is a fundamentally irrational position. And that has no place in the modern world, in my opinion.
We could get rid of the Pope, too.
Well, you know, for up to me. But, you know.
Okay, just checking.
All right, this is KBOO.
What about the Dalai Lama?
I am not a religious guy. Okay, I'm not a religious guy. Period. I don't object to anybody else practicing their religion, except when it gets all up in my face. Except when it informs the passage of laws that restrict my freedom, or more importantly, the freedom of the women in my life. That I resent. I have no problem.
The women in your life?
Oh yeah, Judeo-Christianity has a long tradition of telling women where to go and what they can and can't do with themselves. But that's a story for another time. I also have a problem with religion when it is the backbone of the foundation of a modern state, and that modern state rests upon the notion that God told them they could live on that particular piece of land. That is dumb. That is no basis for the formation of a state of any kind, let alone a modern democratic one.
So we would want to get rid of the United States, since it was largely rationalized by notions of a special a relationship with God here?
Well, it was largely rationalized by some, but the word God does not appear in any of our founding documents. We are an expressly secular state. We have explicit language separating the action of our government from the influence of and the establishment of religion.
I think that's less and less true, but okay.
Well, yeah, and that's another conversation. Again, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We're sticking to the three-minute time limit today.
Obviously. Boy, you're a harsh three-minute timer guy.
Well, this subject makes me cranky.
I can see that.
If you'd like to make a comment in another way, you can visit our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AbeandJoe. You can leave a comment there. Let's go back to the phones. Jim, good morning.
Hi. I won't be 3 minutes. Okay. I just want to ask a couple of questions. Number one, do either one of you think that Israel has a right to exist as a nation?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. And what was your other question?
Oh, no, just answer that first.
I don't know that it is a good question. I think every nation has a right to exist as a nation. I mean, that's assumed, right?
That's fine. So you think that they should exist. Do you think they should exist where they are now?
Well, Israel is a state that exists where it is now. You can't just pick up a state and put it down somewhere else.
Yeah. In other words, should they be somewhere else besides where they are?
Well, they are where they are. It's like it's a moot point.
Well, in other words, what I want to get to you is what you really think should be done about Israel, just the nation of Israel itself.
You're asking me right now to sum up a solution to the mess that is the nation of Israel and its relation with its Arab neighbors. I don't know. I think part of behind your question is another one that says, was it a good idea to establish the Jewish state where it is now?
Yeah, that's good. Okay, answer that one then.
I don't know.
Well, I think he's raising a very interesting point.
He is.
The paradox of the situation comes out of World War II and the tradition of Zionism and the tradition of Arab nationalism. These do not, when they interlock in a very bad way. There is no solution. There really is no solution. When you raise the question, well, where should the Jews move? Now, there is no place nation state-wise where the Jewish people could have a homeland. There's no question about that. Should the Jewish people have a homeland? That is, should the Jews, after many thousands of years, lay claim to nationhood? That's an interesting question, too. And you're saying no.
I'm saying the answer is no.
Well, then you have to...
Do both of you say no?
No. I mean, no, we don't say no.
Joe says yes,
that's
I say no.
I just wanted to make one comment, and then
go ahead, man.
And then I'll hang up. There's a saying that says, if the Muslims give up their arms today, there'll be peace in the Near East tomorrow. But if the Jews give up their arms today, tomorrow the Jews will be liquidated. I'd like to hear you comment on this while I take it off the phone.
No, I appreciate the comment, and I think it's unfortunately true.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So you know, this is the cruel paradox of the situation. Mm-hmm. Having established the state of Israel, and I really believe that the real politic must overcome the what do you want to call it, the spiritual notions about all this. And that's why I really object to the God question in all of this.
I don't think you can separate the God question from
everybody's trying very hard to make sure that they can't. But I really do believe that Israel is in a position where its ability to defend itself, and this is a question of what do we mean by defend itself, is crucial. But I also believe that Israel has seized and taken hold of and created whole communities.
Colonized
vast parts of what was Palestinian turf.
All right, so the question the caller asked was, it was sort of in two parts. Do we believe that Israel has a right to exist, which I think is sort of a question of semantics. I also asked where should the Jewish homeland be, or should there be a Jewish homeland? Your answer to that was yes, mine is no. I don't think there should be a Jewish homeland any more than there should be a Christian homeland or a Muslim homeland. I think Israel, the area called Israel right now, would be much better off as a secular nation with a secular government in which people are free to worship as they please, and it makes no difference to the, under the law or in terms of their citizenship or in terms of the rights they enjoy and the privileges they enjoy every day. Ideally, it would be a secular state and not a Jewish one, and part of the problem is that it is self-identified, Israel is, as a Jewish homeland.
And I agree with you, essentially. But this is why I want to eject the notions of religion involved in all of this. Israel is both a client state and, unfortunately, the tail leading or wagging the dog of the United States for a long, long period of time.
That's true, yeah.
And the fact of the matter is that the vast interest of those who want to maintain the state of Israel, who, many of whom have nothing to do with Judaism, really, mm-hmm. that interest has to do with real politic. And the real politic of the situation is brutal and ugly and wrong.
Yes, I
so,
agree.
So when we talk about this terrible, terrible series of attacks, largely on civilian populations and largely indifferent to the survival of the Arab peoples in the region, when we talk about that, we need to understand it in the larger context of imperialism, of the struggle initially of the United States against the Soviet bloc, and beyond that, of the interests of a relatively small number of people in the United States who want to maintain an American empire. So that's what's going on.
Yeah.
Israel becomes the bad guy, the whipping boy, as it were, for American foreign policy. And when Israel snipes at or attacks the United States, as it did with Kerry recently, what it's really doing is creating a sense that it's somehow a outlaw state. And when it does that, we know suddenly that, oh, there'll be limits upon what can really be accomplished by Israel in this case. When I say accomplished, I don't mean in a positive sense. The destruction of the tunnels, first of all, the creation of the tunnels was necessitated not just by the Hamas desire to get into Israel or attack Israel or whatever, but to have a set of passages which would allow them to bring supplies that were absolutely necessary for the survival of this terribly oppressed and crowded place called Gaza. The decision of the Israelis to knock the tunnels out was essentially about controlling Gaza. It is not about stopping the rockets. The rockets are the excuse.
I can't argue with that.
But what kind of dummies don't care about their civilian population and don't seem to have any sense of their ability to wage this war against Israel? It's a suicidal mission.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea, I think, the only rational idea behind Hamas's behavior is that somehow the world will rise up against these terrible tyrants, the Israelis. Well, that's not going to happen.
No.
In fact, the Arab states, and this is really important, the Arab states have stayed out of this one.
Yeah, they have. Now, you ask what kind of person would do these things. I would suggest that perhaps religious fundamentalists would.
How about desperate people?
Fine. John, good morning.
Hello. Talking about politics, American and Israeli politics. Years ago, when I was doing a research paper, I came across this article. It was by this guy called William Buckley.
Yeah, I know William Buckley.
Yeah, okay,
sure.
Yeah, he was kind of popular back in the 70s.
Yeah.
But anyway, he wrote a little article that advocated that Israel be the 51st state of the United States.
Did he really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, what a disaster that would be.
His premise was that there was more money going to Israel than New York or Missouri.
So he was being ironic? Is that the idea?
Well, I think he would just say that there was just so much cultural, you know, connection, and plus we need a foothold to control the oil supply. This is right after the Yom Kippur War.
Okay.
And so we need a stable foothold in there because the Arabs don't have any kind of relative culture to us. And because oil is so important, et cetera, that we need some safe passage of everything going around, that they would be kind of a good foothold.
So this is Buckley's so-called real politic regarding the oil crisis that followed the Yom Kippur War.
I mean, I've talked to people who've been in Israel, and they said if you go down to some streets, it's just like 82nd Avenue, you know, KFCs, McDonald's.
Right, sure.
So it's really actually...
But that would be true of Amman, Jordan, too. I mean,
well, yeah, I understand that, but it's just that, like, English is a required language there and all that kind of stuff. But just that Buckley was just advocating, you know, that, you know, why not just make it the 51st state? We're pouring so much money and resources into it, you know. Just say, hey, you know, add an extra star.
Yeah, with Buckley, and who I have read over the years, particularly when I was younger, his approach to things is very sarcastic and more about wit than wisdom.
Well, yeah, that's true. But I mean, he's just You talk about conservatism and religion and stuff. I mean, he's sort of like the poster child, or was. I think he's dead now.
Oh, yeah, he's dead.
Yeah. But anyway, that's all I wanted to comment.
Okay, thanks, man.
Hey, thanks.
No, I think I need to be clear here. I do not, I would not have I run the zoo, the vast zoo of humanity, created the state of Israel. But I wouldn't have created World War I, which created World War II, mm-hmm. which created the legitimization for the slaughter of 6 million Jews. I would not have had many things happen, but they've happened.
Yes.
And now we live in terms of real politics, we live in a situation in which the ability of the United States to move freely throughout the world, making its will the will of the world, is more and more limited. And as that limitation grows more and more significant, we're going to see more and more outrageous behavior on the part of the United States and others.
If only we lived under Emperor Joe the Wise and Beneficent.
If you lived under Emperor Joe the Wise and Benevolent, I would die pretty soon, and then there would be chaos.
Nah, that's right, because you probably wouldn't have named an heir, and it would be a succession.
You're so weird.
Struggle.
You are so weird.
I'm so weird.
You're weird.
I think we should toss into this conversation the white elephant in the room, and that's the fact that Israel has the bomb.
Israel has the bomb.
Although they haven't officially admitted it.
No, but they it's generally acknowledged, Janes, et cetera, acknowledges the Israelis have, I can't remember the number, but it's several hundred nuclear weapons.
Yeah, they have enough to do whatever it is they would need to do.
Yeah, but you know, the thing about nuclear weapons is they're not very useful. They really aren't.
Well, if you want to level a city, that's the good way to do it, right?
Yeah, and then what?
Then the utility sort of comes to an end. Let's go to the phones. Mike, good morning.
Another great show. I was saying, the caller a few times back said he asked two questions. He wanted to know what you wanted to do about about Israel, but the first one was, do you believe there should be the Jewish
state
homeland?
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's, as you said, it was a moot point, but I mean, it's relevant to consider what kind of crazy idea was it to plant the Jewish homeland right in the Middle East with its unique demographics. And
I like the way you phrase that. What kind of crazy idea? I think you could find it in the Old Testament, the passages that talk about this is where God wants the Jews to live.
But I mean, it was a
crazy
idea. Specific time in history, and they could have gone anywhere. But
well, wait a minute. They couldn't go anywhere. What would they do? Colonize Africa?
Okay, let me back up. Okay, let me just pause for a second. So, first of all, I'm just saying there could have been other options, and even today, Israel, if you wanted to consider different options, Israel could continue to exist, and there could be another Jewish homeland in, you know, Canada, or just to give one example. But there has to be some consideration for the Palestinians, because they had a home and now they don't. And so I think that the question that's being missed is that we need to ask ourselves is whether Palestine should have a state.
Well, just turn the whole region into a secular government. Give everybody the same rights under the law and form a representative government in which anybody can participate and run for office and share in the business of self-government. It works in other places in the world.
Badly.
Yeah.
There has to... I don't see the Judaism giving up the right to have some self-rule. But they have it definitely to be more inclusive. Just there can be some sort of a union of all of those.
Well, I understand your point. I think it's really important to understand also that the decisions of the Zionist movement, beginning in the late 1800s, to establish a homeland for the Jewish people in Palestine, ignoring the existence of a society of several societies, Bedouin and others, in the region, was a decision based on a Eurocentric model of the world. And it happens that there were people there, and they were driven out by Israeli arms. And that really has some important and deeply significant elements to what the situation is today. A great injustice was topped by another great injustice, and we see now yet another great injustice. And there does not seem to be an end to it, and the United States seems to be largely engaged in supporting Israel and not staying out of the picture. Whether Israel should survive almost is a moot point. Israel will survive, I think, because it is a highly rationalized, largely capitalist, and extremely industrialized and very powerful military power.
Listen, we're out of time. Thank you very much for the call.
I think it was a good call.
Yeah, but the subtext to what you just said, Joe, is Israel will survive, you say, yes, but absent the $3-something billion in military hardware given it by the United States every year, probably would not survive.
That's not going to happen.
I know. That's really frustrating to me.
Okay.
To me, the idea of throwing billions of dollars in military hardware at a theocratic state is a fundamentally irrational position to hold.
See, you see the key. Yeah, here's where you and I disagree, uh-huh. I think. You see the key in the fact of a theocracy.
Yeah, I do.
I see the key basically in real politic of the Cold War and post-Cold War period.
I think that the two are inextricably intertwined in this case.
Well, that might be true.
All right.
I'm not going to fight about that.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Marianne, good morning.
Good morning. I have a very short statement.
Okay.
And I am not going to excuse my voice. I have a tremor, but...
Well, that's okay. Right. Just go ahead.
My head works.
All right.
And what has been going on recently is what I am concerned about. All of the historical facts and the reasons for Israel being there, whether they should be there, doesn't take away from the fact that we have a people that are in a prison with no way of escaping. They are being bombed with rockets and all kinds of destruction to their water supply, to their hospitals, to their schools. They have no place to go. This is genocide. And yes, I agree, it is totally a moral question. The United States is supporting this behavior, this action, this atrocity. And I have never seen anything quite as horrible since the Vietnam War. And that's it.
Well, no, actually, I think, I don't know about A, but I agree with you. I think this is a terrible thing, and I think it is directly the outcome of and enabled, more than enabled, encouraged by the United States.
Yep, Marianne, your brain does, in fact, work. Absolutely.
Thanks very much for the call.
Appreciate it.
All right, I guess we want to take a moment here to consider the fact that whatever we say is irrelevant.
That's always true. And that we can agree.
And I think you and I, if we have a disagreement at all, have to do with the notion of theocracy and how important it is to all of this. I think it is a rationalization on both sides, mm-hmm. and therefore needs to be put out of the picture. But it isn't going to be.
No.
So you're right. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're right, too.
Yeah, well, what the hell.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm not going to be here next week.
Okay.
Because I'm getting married.
Hey, congratulations.
Hey, thanks.
So what a foolish move.
I know. It'll just be Joe next week.
And I'll be here Friday, too, temporarily taking up the positively revolting flag.
All right. Talk to you in a couple weeks.
All right. Bye-bye.
From those lands, Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO Community Radio and Sante Aesthetics and Wellness are proud to co-sponsor A Touch of Portland 2014, an exploration in healing. Saturday, August 16th, from noon to 8 p.m. A Touch of Portland is a KBOO benefit that focuses on the healing arts. It gives participants a chance to sample multiple healing modalities in a comfortable setting. This year will be a block party on Northwest 17th between Davis and Everett. It will feature organic food from local restaurateurs and 8 hours of music broadcast live. We will have multiple modalities of massage, acupuncture, shiatsu, and more. That's Saturday, August 16th from 12 to 8 p.m. A Touch of Portland, an exploration in healing. For more information, go to kboo.fm under events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, Sandra Steingraber speaks about contamination without consent. She recently went to jail in upstate New York in protest of fracking. Steingraber says her small nonviolent action is to challenge fracking, which she calls a form of toxic trespass. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints Investigative News Radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Stage and Studio, Dime Roberts talks with Mo Alilesh, a master of Algerian Berber music, a culture which dates back more than 5,000 years. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Ava Lake speaks with James Lavador, an artist from Walla Walla who has a show opening in Portland this month. Thanks for listening, KBOO. Members and non-members, we'd like you to support KBOO. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Now let's go to Alternative Radio.
Your Honor, I am not a lawyer. I'm a biologist and a human being.